In making this collection, I was discharging a debt of justice. I've never concealed the fact that I regarded him as my master. Indeed, I fancy I've never written a book in which I did not quote from him. This is Pints with Jack, Season 7, Episode 39. MacDonald Month. George's Anthology. Part 2. Welcome everyone. Here on Pints with Jack, we are reading our way through the works of C.S. Lewis, and today we wrap up MacDonald Month with our second episode on George MacDonald, the anthology of MacDonald quotations assembled by C.S. Lewis. And the opening quotation comes from Lewis's preface, which I discussed in the previous episode with Dr. Kirsten Jeffrey Johnson. And today, I'm wrapping up this book with the help of my regular co-hosts, Andrew and Matt. Morning, gents, and welcome to MacDonald Month.
Good morning. I'm not sure how regular we are, but, you know, here we are. I've missed recording with you guys. It's been a while.
It has been, and I'm excited for this because we'll talk about this a little bit later, but I just had different preconceived notions of MacDonald, and they were wrong.
Yeah. Well, and in looking through the anthology, there was just, it was so much richer than the last time I looked at it. And, you know, change of life and all the rest have, I think, a lot to do with it. I also want to note, of course, that we are recording on Kristen Ditchfield Lasso's birthday. So cheers.
Hey. Well, this is just so people know, this is April 12th, as this might be released later. Happy birthday.
Well, it definitely will be released later.
Yes.
And actually, a good thing.
What does that comedian say? Hey, this is a picture of me when I was younger. Every picture of you is a picture of you when you were younger.
Mm-hmm. It's like when people talk about their day and they say, so I woke up. It's like, that's how every day begins.
And if you were talking to me right now, it's obvious that you have.
Well, I'm drinking some Earl Grey, but I also have a hazy IPA from Best Day Brewing. What are you guys drinking?
Morning coffee and my usual non-alcoholic Guinness.
All right. Well, I'm just slacking here. I've got my morning coffee in my Suzhou mug, a place in China called the Venice of China.
Well, cheers.
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 So let's just give some context to MacDonald Month and you guys. Prior to starting MacDonald Month, the only works that I'd read were this anthology and Fantasties. So what have you guys read prior to this MacDonald Month?
Matt, you go first.
Absolutely nothing.
Okay, that was short and sweet.
Yeah.
Well, and so, and not only that, I mean, I've had no exposure other than the bits and pieces that I hear via Lewis. When I came into this, my preconceived notion of him was just seemed like fluffy fairy tales. That's what I was expecting. But I don't really know I was expecting that because Lewis obviously would speak so highly of him, but maybe just the names, Fantasties, Princess and Goblin, these different things. It just came across as like not serious fluffy fairy tales.
Well, maybe Matt should reread Lewis's second best book, in which he strikes quite a figure at the end.
Yes.
Yeah, no, and there is that. You know, there are the fairy stories. And one of the things that's important to kind of understand about MacDonald, I'm sure Kirsten covered this, is that he wrote for a living. And so sometimes he's churning out books, you know, just to get a paycheck. Dickens did some of the same stuff. So I realized, as I was typing up my list of what I've read, that this just proves a point that I often make, that I think that Lewis is a door and a doorway. Like Lewis and his work, his life and work are worthy of study, you know, looking at the door, but he also opens the door to so many other authors. I never would have gotten to Williams or Tolkien or Sayers or, you know, so many others without Lewis. And certainly this is true of MacDonald. Fantasties, Princess and the Goblin, Princess and Curdy, Day Boy and Night Girl, The Golden Key, At the Back of the North Wind, Gifts of the Child Christ, Diary of an Old Soul. What a wonderful book. It's a sonnet, a devotional sonnet for every day of the year. The Light Princess and Other Fairy Tales. And so, yeah, I realized that there's a ton of MacDonald that I read. And all of that is because Lewis kind of opened the door to that.
And Matt, if you needed any more encouragement, Word on Fire have also brought out some of his, what did you call them? Fluffy, non-serious fairy tales. It's called The Golden Key. It's wonderful.
And if you don't want the Word on Fire version, you can get the version illustrated by Maurice Sendak of Where the Wild Things Are.
Needless to say, podcast listeners, Andrew is currently flexing.
Oh, there's going to be some flexing in this episode.
Well, obviously, you guys went with me when I interviewed Dr. Jeffrey Johnson, where we walked through the preface. And you guys actually haven't heard the interview yet, but I wondered whether you had anything in particular that you wanted to say about it, anything that in particular jumped out to you. I mean, Matt, you said that this was your favorite bit.
I mean, I would say, yeah, there was a lot. I ended up taking a lot of notes through this. The preface had a blend of his praise for him, and I thought it was really beautiful. I mean, he heaped a ton on this individual's impact, and honestly, his way to channel just the spirit of Christ. I think he used those words at one point. But then there was also just wonderful quotes in there about this man himself. So what one thing that really stuck out to me was he gave him this description of poverty and wealth. And really, he seemed to have this spirit of just willing to surrender and to surrender to Christ. And so I guess there's a situation, if I recall this correctly, where he became a deacon or something, and they wanted to kind of push him out a little bit or didn't like him. So they cut his pay a bit, and he just kind of...
He was the pastor. The deacons lowered his salary to basically get him to leave.
There we go. I figured you would be able to help fill in the gap for me. Didn't need to double check that beforehand. And so he has this, and he just kind of surrenders to it. And now eventually he did end up leaving out of his own fruition. And it sounds like that was actually God's will, because he left into a role that ended up becoming so instrumental later in life. But I really like that. Lewis described that he actually had this unique disposition where he enjoyed the finer things of life, but he clearly wasn't a stoic. He wasn't surrendering to poverty out of stoicism, which is almost like pretending goods or even money is an evil. You know, he recognized it sometimes it could be really fun, but he wasn't attached to it, I think, is the clear disposition there. So that stuck out to me. It sounded like he had an incredible fatherly figure in his life, which was so beautiful. He'd said, this was a quote from the preface, "It is against this backdrop of reiterated failure and incessant peril that some of the following extracts can be most profitably read." So just keep in mind as we read, this man had a lot of, according to this, failure, incessant peril. And yet what you read is not a man that's letting the failure impact his disposition at all.
Which is interesting, given Lewis and his own father. They were both always very much afraid that they'd be sent to the poorhouse.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and another thing too, I'll say, here's a quote that I really like, so I'll just read this full. "His peace of mind came not from building on the future, but from resting in what he called the holy present. His resignation to poverty was the opposite pole from that of the Stoic. He appears to have been a sunny, playful man, deeply appreciative of all really beautiful and delicious things that money can buy, and no less deeply content to do without them." Mm-hmm. So I really love that. And then another section I talked about was his obedience. You know, Lewis is big on obedience. We learned this from the Screwtape Letters. We've seen this in so many of Lewis's books. And I guess McDonald's was very similar. He was like, this is Lewis talking, "And in McDonald, it is always the voice of conscience that speaks. He addresses the will, the demand for obedience, for something to be neither more or less nor other than done is incessant. Yet in that very voice of conscience, every other faculty somehow speaks as well. Intellect and imagination and humor and fancy and all the affections. And no man in modern times was perhaps more aware of the distinction between law and gospel, the inevitable failure of mere morality. The divine sonship is the key conception which unites all the different elements of his thought. I dare not to say he is never in error, but to speak plainly, I know hardly any other writer who seemed to be closer or more continuously closer to the spirit of Christ himself." That is just heaping praise.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's right before that, this he notes a note from McDonald's son. His son reports that he never, as a boy or man, asked MacDonald, asked his father for anything without getting what he asked. And so this, it's almost like he's the, MacDonald was the father figure that Lewis wished that he had, because Lewis seems to have been frustrated by his father a great deal. Now, his father was very generous with Lewis, and his father hadn't stood him to one last year at Oxford, he may never have found a position. And so his father was generous, but oftentimes he would ask, you know, he and Warney would ask his father for things, you know, even as to what kind of lunch they wanted to have. And his father really insisted on having his own way. MacDonald seems to be the opposite with his children and to represent the generous father heart of God. And so it's small wonder, I think, that MacDonald baptizes Lewis's imagination. Now, he first reads Fantasties, and there aren't really good father figures there, but eventually he comes to these great parental relationships, and you find them all over the place. You find them in the Princess books and in many other spots, and it seems like that appealed to what Lewis needed most.
Well, real quick, too, speaking to your father thing, and then I'll pass it back to you. Lewis wrote, "He who seeks the father more than anything he can give is likely to have what he asks, for he is not likely to ask amiss." I like that.
Yeah. The other thing that stuck out to me again in rereading this preface is how bad a writer Lewis thought MacDonald.
Yes. I was going to say the same thing.
I'm just going to say we did talk about this, and I'm going to temper this a little bit. You've got to be very careful to follow what he actually says.
Yes.
He doesn't say that he's always a bad writer. He's just probably not in the top tier. Maybe not in the second tier, but if you're up against Shakespeare and Jane Austen and Milton, that's okay. Because he also, he describes the kind of writing that MacDonald does better than anyone.
Right. And also, I mean, I'm not trying to trash MacDonald. It's one of the things that I love the most about Lewis. And the thing that I think even reading this years and years ago, decades ago, really kind of opened my eyes to the way that Lewis thinks. Lewis is able to distinguish that though MacDonald may be, he says, "If we define literature as an art whose medium is words, then certainly MacDonald has no place in its first rank, perhaps not even in its second." So as a literary quality, he's not in the first or second rank. But in terms of so many other things, as a myth maker, someone offering spiritual wisdom, he has no parallel. And for Lewis to say not MacDonald is good or bad, but to say he's not great as a writer, but he's really good in these other areas, is that categorical thing that Lewis always does that helps me to think not binarily instead of good, you know, like good or bad, but good, better, best, bad, worse, worst, and to say, although this was dull, this was really great, and to really be, I think, a lot more open to appreciating several different kinds of goodness when reading a book. And that's not what we do in our modern society. That's not what Twitter does or anything. There is no nuance, and Lewis's critical thinking is full of really important nuance. And so when I say that Lewis taught me how to read and taught me how to think, this is one of those examples.
Well, and David, speaking to what you said here, I just wanted to throw this in here. "There are indeed passages where the wisdom and the holiness that are in him triumphs over and even burn away the baser elements in his style." I mean, it is interesting how he, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, didn't he, you know, he had kind of said, all right, he might not be fantastic in the poetry category or a couple of these other ones, but didn't he say he was like a genius in the fantasy category?
Yeah. And the making of myth.
Mythopoeic. Yeah. That's what it was. Yeah.
And that's one of the other things in the introduction that I think is super helpful. If you've read Experiment in Criticism, chapter 6, I believe, on myth, Lewis talks about myth not being a literary genre. Like, I don't pick up and read a myth. Myth is a quality in different literary genres. So I could read a poem about the Sword in the Stone. I can see a movie about the Sword in the Stone, read a story about it, a fairy tale about it. In all of those different genres, the myth of the younger brother being able to pull the sword out of the stone is what works on us. And that's, I think, you know, I first encountered that idea in Lewis. that that myth is a quality embedded in a genre or a type of writing. Myth isn't itself a type of writing. And he says, of course, that that MacDonald is one of the great purveyors of myth. And Tolkien also, MacDonald is one of the few authors that Tolkien will give credit to. And later on, he takes it back, but that's typical Tolkien. But they both, I think, appreciated this mythic quality. And in writing their own stories that had mythic elements, I think they're, in some ways, both authors are paying a debt back to MacDonald.
Well, as you guys read or reread MacDonald's anthology, we'll get into details, but did anything in particular jump out at either of you?
You mean from the quotations or just in general? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, just anything beyond the preface, anything in particular that you noticed that you wanted to talk about, we'll share some of our favorite quotations in a little bit. But just, I'm just talking more generally.
Yeah, I would say a number of comments. So I alluded to some of them a little bit in the preface, but I'll kind of tease them out here a little bit. So first of all, ton of Lewis is in here. I don't think I really realized that. Second, I would say the one that I kept coming back to most was The Great Divorce. I was like, oh, this mm-hmm. is a very great Divorcean. I thought obedience was really big throughout his stuff. I thought action without feeling, which is obviously very related to obedience, which maybe is the thing that surprised me the most. If we go back to what I was saying in the beginning, you just hear this individual that's fantasy and mythopoetic thingy, and and yet he's like all about action and not feeling, and so it was just so unique. I think that kind of stuck out to me. Those are some high level thoughts.
You know, I agree with you, Matt. I was so hoping you were going to follow mythopoetic with something besides thingy. I was so ready to praise you.
Andrew, I can't I can't give you too much here.
Yeah, it's too early.
No. Much like MacDonald, you can separate out the two things. The core of what Matt was communicating was excellent.
Yes!
The frame of it was a bit
Wait, David, thank you for this. Both, we now have two things. I am like Tolkien and making up my language, and I am like MacDonald mixing up great truth within bad language.
Okay, and where are you with MacDonald about thinking too highly of oneself?
Oh, I'm right there. I am right there.
The thing that stuck out to me, and Matt, you touched on that. I've just got a list in the back of my book of how many different quotes and ideas one originally finds in MacDonald. So when Lewis says, I fancy I didn't write a book where I didn't quote, never wrote a book where I didn't quote him, it's certainly true. And I've got a whole list of some of the Till We Have Faces stuff, as I'm sure that you all noticed. And a lot of those ideas kind of come from MacDonald and live in his brain and then work themselves out in his writing. And I wonder if perhaps having them in the 46 anthology, you know, and reading through all of MacDonald, one can only imagine what that project looked like. I mean, he writes The Great Divorce and he does the George MacDonald anthology right around the same time. But in doing it, he had to revisit MacDonald. And in revisiting him, I think a lot of that stuff bubbles to the surface. And you know, like typically Lewis, if there's a theme in some part of Lewis, it's going to be everywhere. And you certainly see this with MacDonald quotes, phrase after phrase, idea after idea pop up in essays and A Mere Christianity and, you know, and all the others. And so, yeah, I think master is not an overstatement.
Well, in that case, let's get on to today's main activity, which is sharing some of our favorite quotations from the anthology. And, just to prime the pump, I've got a selection of my favorite one-liners. All that is not God is death. People talk about special providences. I believe in the providences, but not in their speciality. The so-called special providences are no exception to the rule. They are common to all men at all moments. It is not by driving away our brother that we can be alone with God. I felt particularly seen in that one when I want everyone just to get out of my house and leave me to peace and quiet. It is by loving and not by being loved that one comes nearest to the soul of another. There is one kind of religion in which the more devoted a man is, the fewer proselytes he makes. The worship of himself. Talk about being seen. And, but how can God bring this about in me? Let him do it, and perhaps you'll know. And this was probably one of my favorites. Because we easily imagine ourselves in want, we imagine God ready to forsake us. And that comes from the wonderfully titled The Cause of Spiritual Stupidity.
I would have loved to ask him the question that, going back to two quotes ago, like, just let him do it. What does that look like? Because, I mean, I love that quote. It's beautiful. It's there's a lot of wisdom to it. But it also doesn't quite I'm not sure how helpful it is. It's like, well, what does this mean? Yeah. Get out of my way.
Well, Lewis says something very similar. He says, is it easy to, I think, I can't remember if it's love or obey God.
It's easy to love God.
Love God. Okay. Is it easy to love God? And he says, it's easy for those who do it. I think the point is not to over-intellectualize what that is, but just simply submitting your will to God and doing your best with it.
You know, I think that the, in some ways, you can boil down the practice of Christian faith in the Christian in whom the Holy Spirit is awake and alive. Can be simply understood as just again and again and again all day long saying, yes, Lord, yes, yes.
Thy will be done.
Not me, but you, right? And Lewis says it in Mere Christianity, the chief job every day is to push back all of the desires that rush at us like wild animals. And, you know, listening to that other, stronger, quieter life, and let that life flow in, and so on all day. Not me, but you. And that's what love looks like. That's what marriage looks like. That's what, you know, ministry looks like. That's what not storming out of your job every day when you encounter nonsense, you know. It's yes, and this too. Yes, 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 yes. That the Lord has not allowed these things in my life because he has forgotten about me or he's asleep at the switch. But he's allowed these difficult things to come into my life and he plans to make good out of them. And my overwhelming tendency is to go, no, 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 Lord, you got it wrong. This can't be right. And the overwhelming challenge of the Christian is to say to everything in my life, yes, this too is also from you. And MacDonald, I think, gets to that.
And by obeying, one learns how to obey. That's what he says in all of these.
Yes, that was another one of mine too. Of course, there's loads from Till We Have Faces. You will be dead so long as you refuse to die. Right?
Mm-hmm. Die before you die. There right? isn't
Unless a man has love, it is well he should have fear. So long as there are wild beasts about, it is better to be afraid than secure. Long did I hate you, long did I fear you. And hatred turns into fear, and fear becomes a pathway to revelation. I've got a handful underlined as relating to Till We Have Faces. And the whole idea of having, right, and avarice and the desire of, you know, the desire for things. It is only when we can be with what we really possess, that is what is of our kind from God to the lowest animal partaking of humanity. This idea of having, and you see it in Pam, I want Michael, you know, in the Great
Divorce.
Mine, echoed into
the meaning of the word.
Yes. But don't you gods know what mine means? Until We Have Faces kind of gives light to what Pam means, because Pam doesn't want to possess Michael. She wants to possess her piece of Michael. And it's MacDonald who shows us that the only one who can really possess while setting free is God. And we need to follow him and love people that way. To have and to hold, but also to let go. I mean, to have and to hold are part of the marriage vows, but to let go and let them be who they are, not who I want them to be, is the daily challenge of marriage. So,
Matt, what were some of yours?
I had a lot, and I kind of categorized them. I essentially ended up going with a lot of ones that just reminded me of Lewis. Mm-hmm. So feelings, a man does not live by his feelings any more than by bread. Very simple. The Great Divorce.
And just related to that, one thing that you notice going through the anthology, there are certainly a few biblical images that MacDonald seems to go to again and again and again, like the secret white stone in the book of Revelation, the temptation of Christ in the desert, the wedding feast at Cana. These are ones he just seems to just, he keeps on going back to that well.
Mm-hmm.
So here's another one. This one is pretty much the Great Divorce chapter. It may be infinitely less evil to murder a man than to refuse to forgive him. The former may be the act of a moment of passion. The latter is the heart's choice. It is a spiritual murder, the worst, to hate, to brood over the feeling that excludes, that in a microcosm kills the image, that idea of the hated. There's actually, you know, there's a lot there. There's the Lewis chapter on the guy that meets the person that kills his son in The Great Divorce. But then there's also that idea of a little bit sins of the flesh versus sins of, you know, passion sins versus sins of the spirit. It's not quite the same dichotomy here, but that hatred is kind of a sin of the spirit.
Yeah.
And so there's a little bit of that in there as well.
And hatred, as Lewis talks about it again in Mere Christianity, or actually he talks about it in Mere Christianity before he talks about this. Before he writes MacDonald, that hatred is that kind of cherishing in my heart the darkness and wishing the darkness was a little darker in the ones that we have. These kinds of seeds of hatred where I relish the person that I don't like when they do. I relish the stupid or foolish deeds or the shortcomings of the people that I don't like, almost proportionally to the way that I forgive the sins of my friends. And both of those are tremendous acts of injustice. And I've heard somebody call it, you know, desecrations of the image of God in them. And so, yeah, this kind of turning away from that, you know, stems from some of what MacDonald did and shows up in Lewis everywhere.
Well, and then there's one that I thought reminded me of the Screwtape Letters. If you remember, this is in the Screwtape Letters, doesn't he say something along the lines of, there's nothing more dangerous than the person looking around him, sees nothing, no God, no sign of that, but holds on to him. This one, to be honest, Lewis practically just stole the quote. The highest condition of the human will is in sight, not seeing God, not seeming to itself to grasp him at all, it yet hold him fast.
The line is, our cause is never more in danger than when a human, no longer desiring but still intending to do our enemy's will, looks round upon a universe where every trace of him seems to have vanished, and he asks why he's been forsaken and still obeys.
This is marvelous. This is the experience of reading this anthology reminds me of, oh gosh, I guess in my 20s, I did a deep, deep dive into the Beatles. And what I found was once I understood and listened, I don't know that I understood it, but once I really carefully listened to every single song by all the Beatles and all the Beatles albums, it's like, oh crap, so-and-so is quoting the Beatles here and so-and-so is quoting the Beatles there, and how the Beatles are the DNA of pop music. They are the kind of founding encyclopedia, and every pop and rock artist, you know, for the next several decades, kind of read the Bible of the Beatles. And in a similar way, this, you can see that MacDonald is so much a part of Lewis's DNA. I don't know that he was trying to remember the quote and quote it. I think that these, for a lot of these, the ideas just crawl up inside of him. And, you know, and he holds them inside of himself. But also we know he had this tremendous memory. So I think when he's writing, he's not consciously saying, let me throw in a MacDonald quote. But the MacDonald so becomes part of his DNA as a Christian, as a writer, and all the rest, that it just, it shows up inside, you know, it lives inside of him and just can't help but show up everywhere.
Well, the good thing too is Lewis practically did a blanket citation and just said, there's not a book that I haven't done that doesn't quote George MacDonald. So I do appreciate that too.
Right. Now remember that that's in 46. So there aren't a whole lot of books by then. But I think that you could probably, you know, find that true in a lot of his later writings.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I would imagine that didn't change post 46. And then I had another one that reminded me of He Leadeth Me. A man must not choose his neighbor. He must take the neighbor that God sends him. that just reminded me of, He Leadeth Me doesn't talk about neighbor, but it talks about God's will. So often we try to think of what God's will is and almost like manifest it. Here's how I'm going to be God's instrument in this moment in time, rather than just taking what comes our way and recognizing God brought this, even if it's greatly different than what we thought.
And when you read Perelandra, you'll find Tenedril saying, you know, the Green Lady saying, should I not accept the wave that Malaldil sends me, right? I should say yes to whatever God sends my way. And you see a little of that in Out of the Sign of the Planet.
Mm. Mm. And did you also notice as you were going through the quotations that MacDonald has a very similar attitude both towards nature and animals? Mm. So he says something very similar to what Lewis says in The Four Loves about what nature can be. And MacDonald talks about, he says, what idea could we have of God without the sky? Which is a wonderful idea. But also about animals. What I originally thought was Lewis's pretty unique idea about that when man is raised into God, that man himself then draws the lower creatures in as well. That idea seems to be firmly rooted in MacDonald.
Absolutely. You hear it echo again in Weight of Glory. Nature is mortal. We shall outlive her. When all the suns and nebulae have passed away, each one of you will still be alive. Nature is only the image, the symbol, but it is the symbol Scripture invites me to use. We are summoned to pass in by nature, beyond her, into that splendor which she fitfully reflects. And in there, in quote, in capital letters, in beyond nature, we shall eat of the tree of life, which is where Phil Keaggy gets the name of his marvelous instrumental album, Beyond Nature.
Currently being flexed on screen.
Yes, with my name on the inside.
Listeners, it's unfortunate that you don't get to see the video recordings of these.
We don't have that time.
It'd be great if we had like a compilation reel of Andrew's flexes.
I know. Reels are supposed to be short, dude.
Yeah. I really liked this one, the Great Divorce, kind of conforming to reality idea. There are those who in their very first seeking of it are nearer to the kingdom than many who have for years believed themselves of it. In the former, there is more of the mind of Jesus. And when he calls them, they recognize him at once and go after him. While the others examine him from head to foot and finding him not sufficiently like the Jesus of their conception, turn their backs and go to church or chapel or chamber to kneel before a vague form mingled of tradition and fancy. You know, this made me think of The Great Divorce, obviously conforming yourself to reality. This actually made me think of The Chosen, of like Peter in the very beginning, like that first, I want to say that was the first pilot episode where he just falls to his knees when he sees Jesus instantly. Versus all of the high priests and stuff that just can't quite get because it doesn't fit. Actually, it's exactly like The Chosen, the high priest that can't figure him out. There was just so much there. I loved this.
Well, and it's Screwtape too, right? You know, make sure that his image of God is like some big bearded man at the top right corner of his room or whatever. And the preface that Lewis writes in Joy Davidman's copy of The Great Divorce, there are three images that I must continually forsake and replace with better ones. My image of God, yes. My image of my neighbor, and my image of myself. And so this idea of this but not this, right? Looking at all creation and saying this also is thee, but this is not thee, right? And to see through the image to the reality behind it and to eschew, to forsake the essential idolatry that kind of undergirds everything that we go on in society. So part of the vitriol in the political system is because we have a false image of what politics is meant to do or what a president, you know, should do. And we are putting in God's place what was created, and we should forsake the created for the creator. And Lewis kind of does a ton of this, but he, you know, clearly the spiritual DNA of that is from MacDonald.
And MacDonald can really be quite savage. I have a section of savage entries. For example, he says, I cannot be perfect. It is hopeless, and he does not expect it. That's a quotation. It would be more honest if he said, I do not want to be perfect. I am content to be saved. Such as he do not care for being perfect as their Father in heaven is perfect, but for being what they call saved. And he says this one as well. The things that come out of a man are they that defile him. Mm. And to get rid of them, a man must go into himself, be a convict, and scrub the floor of his cell. And this one made me chuckle. Our friends will know us then. For their joy, will it be, or their sorrow? Will their hearts sink within them when they look on the real likeness of us? Or will they rejoice to find that we were not so much to be blamed as they thought?
Yeah.
You know, I really liked, this one was actually a new idea. Maybe it's in Lewis, I don't remember it, but a concept of assimilation. All wickedness tends to destroy individuality, and declining natures assimilate as they sink. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, as I read that, it is in Lewis in the reverse at the very end of Mere Christianity, where he said, go to Christ and you'll be given your true self, which is, I guess, the reverse of wickedness. So
no, he does have the wickedness as well. Sameness is to be found most among those most natural men, not among those who surrender to Christ. How monotonously alike all the great tyrants and conquerors have been. How gloriously different are the saints.
Yeah.
There's another one plucked from George MacDonald. Yeah. Oh, I remember, like, David, when were we recording? This must have been a long time ago when I also, we were reading some, oh, actually, this was when we were reading Chesterton. I'm like, man, Lewis got a lot from Chesterton. And I'm like, oh, man, Lewis got a lot from MacDonald. Lewis was really great at
transposing.
Popularizing, synthesizing, communicating. Maybe that's what that one author, BB, transposing so well. I remember when I was reading Chesterton, I'm literally like, oh, wow, this is, I thought this was Lewis's idea.
I think synthesizing is a good word. It's to have the same thesis, right?
Yes.
But the thing about Lewis that's so maddening for the average learner is that he's not only doing this deeply with MacDonald and deeply with Chesterton. He's doing it with Virgil, and he's doing it with Homer.
The Bible.
Yes. He's doing it with Jane Austen, and he's doing it with Shakespeare and Milton. And I mean, he's just, yes. And
the Bible. What about Jesus?
Oh my God. I mean, he's doing it everywhere with everything. And, you know, and he remembers what he's read. And so he continues to read voraciously. And that stuff just adds up into his head. I mean, that's part of the miraculous of Lewis. And I think that doing the deep dive into MacDonald is very instructive for what happens with just about everything Lewis read. One of the great things one can do if you're looking for something to read, at the Wade Center site, and maybe we can put a link, they've got a public document. I think it's a PDF document or something, maybe an Excel spreadsheet of all of the Lewis author copies that the Wade Center has. They have like 2,500 volumes of Lewis's books, and you can see which ones he's signed and which ones he's annotated. But you can also, you know, in looking at it, you can just look at what Lewis had in his library and, you know, what he had read. And so if you're at a loss and wonder what Lewis read, you know, a perusal of that list will give you plenty of material to put on your bedstand for years to come.
Mm-hmm. So, piggybacking off of the assimilation one, here's our slow fade, as we all love, of Lewis's concept. A man may sink by such slow degrees that long after he is a devil, he may go on being a good churchman or a good dissenter in thinking himself a good Christian.
And that comes from the Screwtape Letters. Indeed, the safest road to hell is the gradual one, the gentle slope, soft underfoot, without sudden turnings, without milestones, without signposts.
One more piggybacking off that before finishing my section of with love. The one principle of hell is, I am my own.
Mm-hmm. What's the Lewis quotation that's associated with that?
My will be done.
Yeah. Yeah. The great divorce. There are only two kinds of people in the end. Those who say to God, thy will be done. And those to whom God says in the end, thy will be done.
Boom.
I'm impressed.
David's face right now was in shock when I got it right.
it's also the juxtaposed chapters in Mere Christianity, that the great sin is pride, and then the next chapter is love, right? And my opposition of, or definition of, pride is the opposite of love, and love is the opposite of pride. And yeah, not me, but you. And it's the struggle that every single person in the Great Divorce does. And then Lewis brings that gloriously to fruition in Till We Have Faces as somebody who says, I am at the very beginning, but realizes at the end of that book that she is no answer. It's the forsaking of self and the preferring of Christ to self that's the great challenge throughout the in the spiritual world.
Well, speaking of love, such is the mercy of God that he will hold his children in the consuming fire of his distance until they pay the uttermost farthing, until they drop the purse of selfishness with all the dross that is in it, and rush home to the Father and the Son and the many brethren, rush inside the center of the life-giving fire whose outer circles burn. It's like, I love that because he's at one time talking about the mercy of God, but the mercy of God is allowing us to experience the pain of his distance. So we come rushing back to him when we're turned away from him. It's like the parent that allows their child to make the mistakes and fail in life because they realize and experience consequences because they realize that's the only way they're going to come back to the right way.
But that's also the end of Four Loves. You know, if I haven't said enough about how to practice the presence of God, at least I've helped people to see how to practice the absence of God, to become increasingly aware of our own unawareness. It is not enough. It is something. And yeah, I mean, you see that embedded right there. That's from the Four Loves, which of course is the prose version of...
Well, one thing that I was going to point out is that there are quite a few things that I saw would be very personal to Lewis. There's a wonderful extract on dipsomania, so alcoholism. And I can't help but think that Lewis was thinking of his brother when he read this. It is a human soul still, and wretched in the midst of all that whiskey can do for it. From the pit of hell it cries out. So long as there is that which can sin, it is man. And the prayer of the misery carries its own justification. When the sober petitions of the self-righteous and the unkind are rejected, he who forgives not is not forgiven. And the prayer of the Pharisee is as the weary beating of the surf of hell. This is the kicker. While the cry of a soul out of its fire sets the heartstrings of love trembling. And there was also this line, which made me think of the first half of Surprised by Joy. Complaint against God is far nearer to God than indifference about him. Lewis didn't believe that God existed and was very angry that God didn't exist.
That made you think of Surprised by Joy?
Yeah, we're going to say Orwell.
And who's the embodiment of that?
Complaint against God is far nearer to God.
Wait, read the quote again. Read the quote again. And, you know... being therefore free from fear, I will write what no other man can write. I will write my complaint against the gods, right? And so, but that complaining against the gods is her first step, right? And she is one step further, I think, than most of the characters in The Great Divorce. And Pam complains against God, but she's really just complaining that she's not getting her own way, you know, so. Yeah.
Well, honestly, they all are. I have a 18-page document of all of my favorite quotations that I pulled out. I'm just going to just mention a few of them rather than quote them. There's a wonderful one about goodness where he speaks about Jesus. Just when we praise a saint for his goodness, he actually sees his own sin. But since there was none of that in Jesus, all he does is then look to the goodness of the Father. There's a wonderful one where he talks about the wedding at Cana and where Mary petitions him. He says, at the prayer of his mother, when Mary asks him to do something, he is willing to incorporate her will into his will. And he's using that as a departure point for how God can cooperate with our free will. And Lewis echoes something when he talks about prayer, about God incorporating our petitions into his will. There is a very touching quotation about doubt. He says, to deny the existence of God may involve less unbelief than the smallest yielding of doubt of his goodness. And then he says, Doubt must precede every deeper assurance, for uncertainties are what we first see when we look into the region hitherto unknown, unexplored, unannexed. He says, doubts are the messengers of the living one to the honest. Mm-hmm. And we spoke about doubt in an earlier episode mm-hmm. of this McDonald month, and it's really good for those who are struggling with their faith that McDonald sees doubt as something that's good and can be very, very fruitful.
Yeah, I've always said that yelling at God is so much better than not talking to him at all, right? And that's he good. Can take our anger against him, and he can take our moments of doubt. One of the small keys, I think, to a successful Christian life, not in the you know, Joel Osteen sense of that, but one of the small keys is to feel all of the feelings and all of the unorthodox, unchristian things and keep telling God about them. God, I don't believe in you right now. God, I'm really mad at you. God, I can't see why you would have allowed this to happen. But keep telling him about that, because in addressing him, we are connecting that visceral, essential relationship. Even if what's coming out of our mouths doesn't sound very pretty and sound very churchy and sound very devotional. In some ways, I think that the prayer of anger and the prayer of dissatisfaction with God, when made to God, is in some ways more beautiful than the best composed prayer that has some dispassion to it. And so it's okay to shout at God. Just keep shouting at him and including him in the conversation. And I think that that's a great step on the good road.
And to be fair, a lot of the Psalms don't sound very churchy either.
No, they don't. One of the things that really stuck out to me on this rereading is how much good spiritual wisdom McDonald has. And so I'll just read one. This is 330 on prudence. Had he had more of the wisdom of the serpent, he would perhaps have known that to try too hard to make people good is one way to make them worse, that the only way to make them good is to be good, remembering well the beam and the mote, right? The beam of light and the mote, and there's meditation in a tool shed, that the time for speaking comes rarely, the time for being never departs. Mm-hmm. And so now, as a minister, to read all of from a minister things from his sermons, the spiritual wisdom is really helpful. One more. Prayer. Oh God, I cried, and that was all. But what are the prayers of the whole universe more than expansion of that one cry? It is not what God can give us, but God that we want. Right? And so when Orwell realizes that what she wants is not psyche, but God. If Pam ever realizes that she didn't want Michael, she wanted God's image in Michael, maybe she would get on the bus again and come back and find what she really wanted. So just so much real depths of spiritual wisdom there that I find so applicable to me every day.
Well, I thought we would wrap up with me taking you guys to my Copycat Jack document, which I wrote as I was reading through the anthology of all of the sections where McDonald says something that reminds me of Lewis. I've ticked off a load of the ones that we've mentioned already, but I thought we could go through a few more of them and you could see which other ones I found, and you guys guess. I've hidden what my Lewis reference was, so see if you guys can guess what I was thinking of. Number 55, when he says, what father is not pleased with the first tottering attempt of his own little one to walk? What father would be satisfied with anything but the manly step of the full-grown son?
Mere Christianity, book four, chapter 9.
Stop cheating, Matt.
I think that Matt said it was from Mere Christianity, but I also pulled up the Screwtape quote out of my brain, Matt. if there
What's
is,
that
if,
like?
If there... I'll tell you in a couple of decades. If their intention is to walk, he is pleased even with their stumbles. Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. Honestly, there are multiple quotes I could give for each of these, so it's going to be interesting to see what connections each of us make. Well, how about this one? A man is in bondage to whatever he cannot part with that is less than himself. And also this one. There is no heaven with a little hell in it. No plan to retain this or that of the devil in our hearts or our pockets. Out Satan must go, every hair and feather.
Oh, yeah. That's great divorce.
If we insist on keeping hell, we shall not see heaven. If we accept heaven, we shall not be able to retain even the smallest and most intimate souvenirs of hell. Yeah, that's from the preface.
Right. And it's also the end of mere Christianity. Nothing that has that we have not let go of, nothing that has not died will ever be raised from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
This is basically going to be a two-way game, not a three-way game, David. You understand that.
No. I have great hopes. How about this one? It's from number 130. Man finds it hard to get what he wants because he does not want the best. God finds it hard to give because he would give the best, and man does not want it.
Ooh.
Get what he wants. I think that's like a blend of, ironically, I think that's a blend of Lewis and Chesterton, but it made me think of the mud pies. You know, we just don't have these great things.
That's bingo. Nice. The weight of glory.
Wow. Yes. Wow. Got
the
one.
Shock it all. But then I also thought of Chesterton of like, he's not found wanting. He's found not tried and or hard and left untried.
It's also surprised by joy. One blithely may speak about man's search for God. To me, you may have well spoken as the mouse's search for the cat, right? Mm. Finally, in Trinity Term 1930, I knelt, what I greatly feared at last came upon me. I knelt and prayed and admitted that God was God, right? That's not what I wanted.
All right, how about this one? Number 4. For he regards men not as they are merely, but as they shall be. Not as they shall be merely, but as they are now growing or capable of growing towards that image after which he made them, that they might grow into it. Therefore, 1,000 stages, each in itself all but valueless, are of inestimable worth as the necessary and connected graduations of an infinite progress. A condition which of declension would indicate a devil may of growth indicate a saint.
Hmm. Oh, there's clearly a couple. There's, all who are in hell choose it. Right, there's great divorce, mm-hmm. And those who find themselves in hell will find that they have been going there all along. And then there's also mere Christianity, where he says the loss of a hill or loss and gain of a hill. Is that it?
That was close to what I was thinking of. I was thinking of the heavenly and hellish creatures. Each of us, each moment, is progressing to one state or the other.
Yes. Oh, that's weight of glory too.
Mm-hmm. This is a book that we haven't done on the show. Number 10, it says, but herein is the Bible itself greatly wronged. It nowhere lays claim to be regarded as the word, the way, the truth. The Bible leads us to Jesus, the inexhaustible, the ever-unfolding revelation of God. It is Christ, quote, in whom are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge, not the Bible, save as leading to him. Quite a provocative statement, but Lewis says something very similar.
Yep. It's a mere Christianity.
That actually wasn't the one I was going for. I was going for the letter to Mrs. Johnson. He says, it is Christ himself, not the Bible, who is the true word of God.
Yeah.
The Bible read in the right spirit and with the guidance of good teachers will bring us to him.
Oh, very nice there. Yeah. No, he's paraphrasing there. He talks in mere Christianity about the revelation of Christ is primary and the Bible is necessarily one step away. But it leads to Christ.
So then number 62, he says, when a man is one with God, what should he do but live forever?
When a man is one with God.
Okay, I'm going to reveal it. That's a mere Christianity line. He talks about getting into the water, getting near the fire, and then he says, once a man is separated from God, what can he do but wither and die? Once a man is united to God, how can he not live forever?
I would never have got that. And that's... That's again that waterfall image that comes up so often.
Yeah. Okay. I'll be really impressed if you get this one. Truth is truth, whether from the lips of Jesus or Balaam. That's number 14.
All right.
We did this one very recently.
Was this one in Letters to Giovanni, the Latin letters?
We should mark what is said, not who said it.
I feel good.
Number 26, he talks about miracles in the slow, and Lewis does exactly the same thing in his book, Miracles, when he's talking about changing water into wine. Any other ones here? Maybe a couple more. Oh, yeah. So I've got one more. Well, actually, I have a bunch more. But how about this one to end with? So number 333 is Preacher's Repentance. O Lord, I have been talking to the people. Thoughts wheels have round me whirled, yeah. A fiery zone, and the recoil of my words airy ripple. My heart unheedful has puffed up and blown, therefore I cast myself before thee prone. Lay cool hands on my burning brain and press from my weak heart the swelling emptiness.
Yes.
What am I thinking?
That is Apologist Evening
Prayer. Yeah, that's the one. So,
from all my thoughts, even of my thoughts of thee, O thou fair silence, fall and set me free.
Lord of the narrow gate and the needle's eye, take from me all my trumpery.
Take from me all my trumpery, lest I die. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But honestly, I could have just kept going. It's just repeated. There's an idea of throwing yourself in, which you find in Pilgrim's Regress about the diving.
No, it's not in Pilgrim's Regress until it's in early prose.
Well,
joy,
obviously. he talks about MacDonald speaks about they regard the father of their spirits as their governor, which is also Pilgrim's Regress. It's throughout. So. I kind of wanted to end with by really driving this one home for people that haven't read MacDonald. This MacDonald month has been really wonderful for me. I had read some of him before, now I've read a lot more. And we really do need to discharge this debt. Lewis discharged debt with the anthology for everything that MacDonald had given him. And I think it is incumbent upon every Lewis fan to be more familiar with MacDonald, because Lewis got so much from him.
Yes. And Lewis said, I think he said, maybe it was of Kirkpatrick, but I think he said of MacDonald, I fancy that I owed him as much as one man can owe another. Mm-hmm.
Mm. That would be me for Lewis.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that.
Well, any final thoughts before we wrap up this episode?
No, when I told Mary Margaret we were reading this, she had told me she had read a number of MacDonald's works already. I'm like, I knew I loved you.
Well, it was the same for Marie, actually, as well. She had read more MacDonald than I had to begin with.
Ooh, this is a good sign.
Well, and Kristen just wrote an audiobook company called Audio One, and they did Princess and Curdy, I think. And Kristen wrote a commentary that's available for download. So she just wrote on MacDonald. The thing I would suggest is readers or listeners, grab MacDonald. Look for him. Probably easier to find than Lewis in your local bookstore, your used bookstore. And fairly easy to find online, you know, decent editions, you know, modern editions at affordable rates, especially the Word on Fire thing. Grab MacDonald and try him out. If it's a novel, read the first chapter. And if you're put off by it or not there yet, just save it on your shelf. You're not old enough to read that yet. It's okay not to continue reading something that doesn't really grab you. Grab Diary of an Old Soul, marvelous poems, one poem for every day of the year. Grab a collection like The Gifts of the Child Christ, a collection of his fairy tales, or The Light Princess and Other Fairy Stories, which has got this wonderful preface. We didn't even touch on it. Wonderful preface about world making. And he talks in very Lewisian and Tolkien ways about creating a little world of one's own. Man may, if he pleases, invent a little world of his own with its own laws, for there is that in him which delights in calling up new forms, which is the nearest, perhaps, that he can come to creation, right? It's the Tolkien gets his idea of subcreation from there. So grab some MacDonald, read a little bit of it. If it doesn't please you, read something else, but keep him there and have a little wing in your library where you've got some MacDonald's, because he'll find a place in you. When the right time comes for the right book.
And do remember that Pints with Jack has provided an audiobook of The Golden Key, free of charge, available on Patreon.
Yes.
Oh
yeah.
My son has just invaded.
Alexander. Yay. Hi, Alexander.
Hi, Alexander.
Hey, buddy.
Hi, buddy.
I hope I get to see you at the wedding, buddy.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm happy to see you today. Thank you for coming in.
Matt, do you have any final thoughts?
No, this was lovely.
I'll take that. Well, I hear the call for final drinks. So thanks to our sound engineers, Taylor and Sarah. Thanks to our intern, Julia. Thanks to all of our listeners and patron supporters, particularly our top tier supporters, the future Mrs. Bush, Aldo, Alex, James, Matt, Erica, Joelle, Amanda, Thomas, Bud 1, Bud 2, Shane, Kay, Paul, Gary, Stephen, Kelly, Chris, John, James, Kate, Peter, David, Angela, and Rowdy. We pray for our listeners every single time we release an episode, and we remember the prayer requests in our Slack channel. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media and start reading McDonald. And join us next time.
When we'll continue going further up
and further in.
Cheers.
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 And happy birthday, Mrs. Lazo.